But through certain officials of the harem, and certain officers of the guard, who had been eager for new things, connections had been established, on the one hand with the palace itself, where a number of friends, some of them highly placed, a head charioteer of the guard, the chief of gendarmes, the steward of the fruit stores, the overseer of the king's herds of oxen, the head keeper of the king's ointments, and certain others, were won over for the enterprise, and, on the other hand, they got in touch with the outer world of the residential city, where, through the officers' wives, the male kindred of Pharaoh's graces were drawn in and engaged to stir up Wayse's population with evil talk against the old Ray, who by now was nothing at all but gold and silver and lapis lazuli. In all, there were 270 conspirators privy to the plot. It was a proper and a pregnant number, for there had been just 72 when Red Set lured Usir into the chest. And these 72, in their turn, had had good cosmic ground to be no more and no less than that number, for it is just that number of groups of 5 weeks which make up the 360 days of the year, not counting the odd days. And there are just 72 days in the dry fifth of the year, when the gauge shows that the nourisher has reached his lowest ebb, and the god sinks into his grave. So where there is conspiracy anywhere in the world, it is requisite and customary for the number of conspirators to be 72. And if the plot fail, the failure shows that if this number had not been adhered to, it would have failed even worse. Now, the present plot did fail, although it had had the benefit of the best models, and all the preliminary steps had been taken with the greatest care. The head keeper of unguents had even succeeded in purloining a magic script out of Pharaoh's bookhouse, and, following its instructions, had shaped certain little wax images. These were smuggled about here and there, and were calculated to produce, by magic, a mental confusion and bewitchment such as must assure the success of the undertaking. It was decided to put poison in Pharaoh's bread, or his wine, or in both, and to use the ensuing confusion for a palace coup. Combined with a rising in the upper city, this was to have led to the proclamation of a new era, and the elevation of the young bastard Noferkaptah to the throne of the two lands. And then, all at once, the lid blew off. Possibly at the last minute, one of the 72 decided that by choosing the loyal part, he would do better for his career and for the beauty and interest of the wall paintings in his tomb. Or perhaps a police decoy had wormed himself into the councils from the start. Anyhow, a list had been put into Pharaoh's hands. It was painful enough reading, containing as it did the names of a number of really close friends of the god and visitors at his levee. The list was, on the whole, correct, though not quite free from errors and mistaken identities, and the prosecutions had been swift, quiet, and thorough. The Isis of the women's house was straightway strangled by eunuchs. Her little son was sent into outermost Nubia, and a secret commission met to investigate the whole scheme and each particular guilt. Meanwhile, the persons thus exposed were labeled in one common epithet, Abhorred of the Two Lands, while cruel distortions were made of their personal ones, under which they disappeared into various custodies to await their fate in circumstances quite foreign to their usual habits. And thus it was that Pharaoh's chief baker and chief butler had come down to the prison where Joseph lay. Joseph helps out as interpreter. They had been sitting there now for 37 days, when Joseph one morning made his usual call to inquire how they had rested and to ask after their commands. He found the two gentlemen in a frame of mind which might be called excited, depressed, and annoyed all at once. They had by now begun to get used to the simple life, and had ceased to complain. After all, it is not necessary to life to live as they had lived, surrounded by malachite and diorite, with servants to scratch the soles of their feet. Indeed, with a bathing place on their right, and a retiring place on their left, and some opportunity to shoot arrows and throw nines as a substitute for the lordly bird-shoot, life is not so bad after all. But today they looked definitely relapsed into their former spoilt children's state. As soon as Joseph appeared, they exhausted themselves in the old bitter complaints. How, after all, they lacked for the most elementary conveniences, and how their life here, however honest the effort they had made to come to terms with it, still continued to be a dog's life. They had had dreams the night before, they said, in answer to Joseph's sympathetic questioning. Each of them had dreamed his own dream, and each dream had been of the most speaking vividness, highly impressive, unforgettable, and of quite peculiar flavor. Dreams that unmistakably meant something, wearing the sign, "Understand me aright," on their brows. They fairly cried out for interpretation, and at home each of them had had his own interpreter of dreams, experts in all the monstrous brood of the dark hours, with eyes for every detail to which a claim of significance could be attached, equipped with the very best dream books and expositions, Babylonian as well as Egyptian, and only needing to turn the leaves if they themselves fell short of ideas. And when they were at a standstill and the books did not help them out, the two courtiers could call a convocation of temple prophets and learned scribes, by whose combined powers the matter could certainly be got to the bottom of. In short, in every such case, they had been promptly, efficiently, and aristocratically served. But now? And here? They had dreamed. Each of them his own special, striking, and poignant dream, each with a strange flavor of its own. Their minds were full of them, and there was nobody in this accursed hole to interpret these dreams and serve them as they were used to be served. That was a deprivation far harder to bear than the loss of feather beds, roast goose, and bird shooting. It made them feel their intolerable degradation even to tears. Joseph listened and stuck out his lips a little. "Well, gentlemen," said he, "to begin with, if it is any consolation to you to know that someone feels for you in your distress, then behold in me one who does so. But it might even be possible to do a little something about this lack that so upsets you. I have been appointed your servant and caretaker, and, so to speak, I am here as a general-purpose assistant. So why not, after all, for dreams as well? I am not quite unversed in the field. I may boast of a certain familiarity with dreams. Do not take the word amiss. It is only apt. For in my family and tribe, we have always been in the habit of having interesting dreams. My father, the shepherd king, while on his travels, had a first-class dream, in a certain place, which clothed his whole being with dignity for the rest of his life. It was always an uncommon pleasure to hear him tell it. And in my previous life, I myself had much to do with dreams. I even had a nickname for it among my brothers, who made a jest of this peculiarity of mine. You have had so much practice in putting up with things. How would it be if you put up with me, and told me your dreams, in order that I might try to interpret them?" "Yes, indeed," said they. "Very good. You are a most agreeable young man, and you have a way of looking dreamily into space with your charming, yes, even beautiful eyes, when you talk of dreams, that we could almost have confidence in your capacities. But even so, it is one thing to dream, and quite another to interpret." "Do not say so," he responded. "Do not say it without qualification, for it may well be that dreaming is a single whole, wherein dream and interpretation belong together, and dreamer and interpreter only seem to be two separate persons, but are actually interchangeable, and one and the same, since together they make up the whole. Whoever dreams, interprets also, and whoever would interpret must have dreamed. Your Excellencies, Lord Prince of the Bread and Hereditary Cup-Bearer, you have lived under luxurious circumstances of unnecessary division of labor, so that when you dreamed, the interpretation was the business of your private soothsayers. But at bottom, and by nature, everybody is the interpreter of his own dream, and only out of sheer elegance does he have himself served with an interpretation. I will reveal to you the mystery of dreaming. The interpretation is earlier than the dream, and when we dream, the dream proceeds from the interpretation. How otherwise could it happen that a man knows perfectly when an interpretation is false, and cries, 'Away with you, ignoramus! I will have another soothsayer who interprets to me the truth. Well, at least try it with me, and if I blunder or do not interpret after your own knowledge, chase me away to hide my head in shame. I will not tell mine, said the chief baker. I am used to better service, and I prefer to go without, in this as in other things, sooner than take an unprofessional person as interpreter. I will tell mine, said the butler. Truly, I am so eager for an interpretation that I will gladly put up with what comes, especially since this young man shows some familiarity with the subject, and narrows and veils his eyes in such a promising way. Young man, prepare to hear and to interpret, but pull yourself together, as I likewise must pull myself together, to find the right words, and not murder my dream in the telling, for it was so clear and lifelike and full of inimitable spice. For we know, alas, how a dream like that shrinks when you try to put it into words, and becomes the mummy and withered, swaddled image of that which it was when you dreamed it, and it grew green and blossomed and bore fruit like the vine which was before me in this my dream. For it seems I have already begun to tell it. It seemed to me I was with Pharaoh in his vineyard, and beneath the roof of the vaulted bower where Pharaoh was resting, and before me was a grapevine. I see it still. It was a marvelous vine, and had three separate branches. You understand, it grew green, and had leaves like human hands. But though the arbor was already hanging full of heavy bunches of grapes, this vine had not fruited yet, for that took place before my very eyes, in my dream. Lo, it grew before them, and began to blossom, sending forth the most beautiful thick blooms among its foliage. And the three branches put out grapes that ripened visibly with the swiftness of the wind, and their purple fruits were as bouncing as my own cheeks, and bulged as nobody's cheeks in these parts. I rejoiced greatly, and with my right hand I picked the grapes, for in my left I held Pharaoh's beaker, half full of cool water. And full of feeling, I squeezed the juice of the grapes into the cup, remembering as I did so that you, young man, sometimes squeeze a little grape juice into water and give it to us when we order wine. So I gave the cup to Pharaoh into his hand. And that was all, he finished lamely, crestfallen and disappointed by his own words. It is not a little, answered Joseph, opening his eyes, which he had kept closed as he inclined his ear to the tale. There was the cup, and clear water within it, and you yourself pressed the grape juice into it from the vine with the three branches, and gave it to the Lord of the Two Crowns. That was a pure gift, and there were no flies in it. Shall I interpret? Yes, do, cried the other. I can scarcely wait. This is the meaning, said Joseph. The three branches are 3 days. In 3 days you will receive the water of life, and Pharaoh will lift up your head and take away from you the name of shame, so that you are once more called justified in Thebes as before. And he will install you again in your office, so that you can give him the cup again into his hand as when you were his cupbearer. And that is all.
Splendid! Capital! Cried the fat man. That is a beautiful, an excellent, a masterly interpretation. I am served by it as never before in my life, and you, sweet youth, have done my mind an inestimable service. 3 branches, 3 days! How you could have it so pat, you clever youth, and honorable in Thebes again as before, and everything as it used to be, and once more Pharaoh's friend! Oh, thank you, thank you, thank you very, very much!
And he sat there and wept for joy. But Joseph said to him, District Count of Abodu, Nefer-Emwese, I have prophesied to you according to your dream. It was easily and gladly done, and I rejoice that I could give you a happy interpretation. Soon you will be surrounded by hosts of friends, because you have been declared innocent. But here, in these straits, I shall be the first to congratulate you. I was your servant and steward for 7 and 30 days, and shall be so for 3 more, by the governor's orders, asking after your commands and giving you tokens of your accustomed amenities, as far as our limitations permit. I have come to you here in the Vulture House morning and evening, and been like an angel of God, if I may so express myself, into whose breast you could pour your troubles and be condoled with over the strangeness of your lot. But you have not asked me much about myself, and yet, like you, I was not born into this hole, nor did I choose it for my habitation. I landed here, I know not how, put here as a slave of the king, condemned for a sin which is nothing but misrepresentation before God. Your minds were too full of your own misfortunes for you to have much feeling or interest that for mine. But forget me not, and my service to you, Count Chief Cupbearer. Think of me when you are back in all your former glory. Speak of me before Pharaoh, and call to his attention that I am sitting here out of the sheerest misunderstanding, and beg in my behalf that he graciously remove me out of this prison where I am so sorely against my will. For indeed I was stolen away, simply stolen as a boy from my home and brought down here to Egypt, stolen down into the pit, and am like the moon, when an opposing spirit stopped it in its course, so that it could not move shining onwards before the gods, its brothers. Will you do this for me, District Count, Head Cupbearer, and speak of me at court?
Yes, of course, 1,000 times yes, cried the fat man.
I promise you that I will mention you at the first opportunity when I stand before Pharaoh, and will remind him each later time if his mind has not grasped it. It would be swinish of me indeed not to think and speak of you to your advantage, for whether you have stolen or are stolen is all the same to me. Mentioned you shall be, and pardoned, sweet honey youth. And he embraced Joseph and kissed him on the mouth and on both cheeks. But I also have dreamed, said the long man, though the fact seems to have been forgotten here. I did not know, Ibrim, that you were such a skilled interpreter, or I would not have rejected your aid. I now incline to tell you my dream in my turn, as well as it can be told in words, and you shall interpret it to me. Make ready to hearken.
I hearken, answered Joseph.
What I dreamed, said the baker, was this, and was the following. I dreamed, but you can see how ludicrous was my dream. For how should I, the Prince of Menfei, who certainly never sticks his head into the oven, how should I, like a baker's apprentice, be delivering rolls and crescents? But suffice it to say, there I was in my dream, carrying on my head 3 baskets of fine rolls, one on top of the other, flat baskets fitting into each other, each full of all kinds of good things from the palace bakery, and on the top one lay uncovered the baked stuff for Pharaoh, the crescents and rolls. Then a flight of birds came swooping down on spread wing, their talons bared, their necks stretched out, their eyeballs goggling and glaring, and screeched as they came. And these birds, in their boldness, thrust down and ate of the food on my head. I would have lifted my free hand to wave it over the top of the basket and frighten the vermin away, but I could not, for my hand was as lamed, and they hacked at the food, and their flapping was all about me like a wind, and the bird smell of them was piercing in its foulness. Here the baker started, as he always did, went pale, and tried to smile in the misshapen corner of his mouth. That is, he said, you must not imagine the birds and the stench on the air, nor their beaks, nor their goggling eyes, as too utterly disgusting. They were just birds, like any birds. And when I said they hacked, I don't remember whether I said that, but I may have done, that was rather too strong a word, used to give you a feeling of my dream. I ought to have said they pecked. The little birds pecked from my basket. They probably thought I meant to feed them, the top basket being uncovered and no cloth over it. In short, the situation was very natural in my dream, except for me, the Prince of Menfei, carrying the baked stuff on my head. And, of course, that I could not wave my hand, though perhaps I did not want to, because I liked the little birds to come,
And that was all.
Shall I interpret? Joseph asked.
As you will, answered the baker.
The three baskets, said Joseph, are 3 days. In 3 days, Pharaoh will take you out of this house and lift up your head from off you. That is, he will bind you to the post and shall hang you on a tree, and the birds of the air will eat your flesh from off you. And that is all, unfortunately.